Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
You got problems that you ought to be concerned with. Moolah! You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's bad with money with
Gabe S. Hello and welcome to Bad with Money, a show about finances and feelings where we don't talk down to you. I'm Gabe S. Dunn. I am so excited for this episode because I feel like we've been let out of our cage and we're doing just fine. The writer's strike has ended and we have gotten a fair deal. And thus, I am now free to talk a bit more about my debut feature film, which I wrote and am directing. And it is called You and I, You and Me. And for longtime fans of the show, Melissa Motz, our producer for Bad with Money, is also producing this movie. And we are joined today also by our cinematographer, Gabriel Karnick. So Gabriel goes by Gabriel. I go by Gabe. It's confusing. And
I usually call you Gabriel. So
I know there's a he, him, Gabriel and a she, her, Gabriel. And so, yes, first of all, thank you both for being here. We're going to talk about what it takes, like, what it's like making this movie, what it's going to take to make the movie, and then how you can help make the movie, and just general like movie making money stuff. So Melissa, do you want to introduce yourself and explain who you are if this is someone's first time listening?
This is your first time listening. My name is Melissa D. Montz. I'm the producer of this show, and also I'm producing this film. And Gabe and I have known each other for a while and have worked with each other on various projects. And I was drawn to this. Gabe actually sent me the script in an earlier draft of the script, and I really liked it. And I think I shared some thoughts on it. And then when they were like, "I'm going to make this," I said, "I want to produce." And you said, "Okay, we're doing it."
Yeah.
This,
so I mean, look, I think you and I are both people who are like, you don't ask, you don't get. And so you were like, "I'd like to produce a movie." And I was like, oh, amazing. I love that.
Yeah. And so I've produced a lot of podcasts and also produced a series back in the day called Mr. Student Body President that had 4 seasons. So, you know, it's not like I haven't produced a project before. So now I just haven't done a feature. And so I'm excited.
Gabriel, do you want to introduce who you are and also maybe say your dog's name?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Gabriel Karnick. I am the cinematographer for this film. Me and Gabe actually worked together years ago on a web series with Alexis G. Zoll. And then he reached out to me with the script, and it's absolutely amazing. It's so funny, and it's a great little indie piece. And then this is my dog. Her name is Hannah. Her name is Lady Hannah.
Lady. Oh, sorry. Lady Hannah.
Yeah, she's a lady. She's 11 and has a lot of feelings. Like, she won't lay on the ground without a cushion, and she'll tell you about it. And yeah, I've shot a few features, and I've shot a bunch of shorts and music videos and narrative and documentary, and I'm very excited.
Okay, so basically this movie is going to be completely indie. I'll start with saying what it's about. So I wrote it because I had a meeting with an actor. And I wanted to take something that was a tried and true narrative and turn it into something that could be very queer and trans. And I'm a trans guy. And initially, I was nervous to write a trans guy lead because it felt very vulnerable. And so it took some actually prodding from trans friends of mine who read the script in order to make the main character a trans guy. And I think that there's a lot of imposter syndrome and a lot of, you know, it feels very vulnerable to put yourself on screen like that. So, you know, he's not me, obviously, but just, you know, the I realized that the representation with T for T love stories, which is trans for trans, which is two trans people in a relationship, is kind of non-existent. And so I really wanted to do that. And that's how this came about. So it's a trans woman and a trans man musicians. They fall in love over writing her a comeback hit. She's a disgraced former pop star. And he is the record label CEO's son who was a punk rocker and got into all kinds of trouble with drugs. And they're both trying to prove themselves in the industry. And while they're doing that, they fall in love and it's sexy and hot and there's music and it's awesome. It takes place mostly in a recording studio. So we have the benefit of there being like three or four locations, not a lot of actors. And I think, like, to me, looking at it now, I think it'll be really contingent on the performances from the actors and also like creating the mood of the space and like the recording studio's look. So I'm pretty excited. I've directed music videos. I've directed shorts. I had a short called Grindr Baby that was in all the queer film festivals in 2022. That was super fun. You know, I made that on a really low budget too. So pretty scrappy. In terms of financing, well, okay. So in terms of making a budget for a movie, when you look at like a script, Gabriel, what are you thinking about?
I think the biggest thing I noticed first is day. Is it interior, exterior? Is it day? Is it night? The cheapest way to film anything is day exterior in the indie world. And the most expensive way to film anything is night exterior. So everything in between is a sliding scale. So the second least expensive is day interior. The second most expensive is day night interior, and the most expensive is night exterior. So I'm really just like going through and seeing first location number, how many locations are there? Then I'm thinking of day and night interior exterior. Then I'm thinking about like, is there car stuff? And then I'm thinking about specialty equipment. Do we require Steadicam? Do we require techno cranes? Do we need jibs? Do we need drones? That kind of stuff. So mostly I'm being mindful of, I usually start when I read any script to do a location count as I go, because normally I'll get a script and a budget from a team and I can tell a lot. If the location number is like 70 and the budget is really low, I know that this isn't going to happen. However, if the location number is really low and the budget's like to match that, it's a super plausible, it's working within the realm of reality. So that's like usually a really good sign. And then it's also like, I had a really fun, campy horror movie a couple of years ago. Fantastic concept because of what they wanted to get away with the cars and with the stunts and with the creature feature stuff. It just wasn't doable. So I reached out to them and I was like, I adore, like, it was a fantastic script, but it was just like not plausible. So I'm really being mindful of what the ballpark number is for what we need to get away with and what that would mean for us. From my side, from what I know. So it's usually like, is this, what scale are we at on this? And is it doable?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me as a writer is this mix of reality and delusion. As a writer director, I wrote it with money in mind. So I wrote it to take place indoors. I wrote it to have three locations. I wrote it to have very minimal actors and to focus on these two actors and their chemistry together and their stories and their three-dimensional feelings and complications and transness and all that stuff. And then I didn't, you know, I wasn't writing in car chases. I wasn't writing in, you know, running across a roof. So I think a big part of it when you are making an indie movie, and I want to say for budget, right? Something that was really jarring for me when I first started getting into filmmaking is that when you say low budget, a lot of times people mean $1 million or $2 million or $3 million movies. And that's considered a low budget. For me, and this being completely independent right now and being almost entirely right now funded by interested parties and the limited crowdfunding that we did thus far with you guys, the fans, before we had to stop because of the writer's strike, because of that, our budget is like, you know, around the 300K range. And that is considered extremely low budget for a feature film. But for us, that is a way to be able to pay people what they are owed, to pay people fairly for their work, and to be able to get the best possible look and best possible feel for the movie. So it's funny what sounds like a lot versus what sounds like not a lot in filmmaking. I think in terms of scrappiness, you know, the big obvious one is reading, you know, Rebel Without a Crew by Robert Rodriguez, and the ways in which that when you're making something, especially something that I want to say a lot of indie films come up against, you know, money, but especially something that is queer, trans, that the entire cast and crew are like queer people of color. Like there's one role that's like a white cis guy, I think, is playing. And then everyone else involved in the movie is some form of marginalized person. So especially for that type of thing, you know, that's not going to have studio backing, but it is the type of thing that I think there is a huge audience that will come to see it, that will want to see it made, that will donate whatever little money they have. And a really wonderful thing that happened in the wake of first promoting this movie is that a lot of you wrote in and volunteered your time, volunteered your services, not just volunteered, but asked, you know, what are ways that I can do this for a price that makes sense for you guys? And so that was like incredibly moving. I wasn't really expecting that. So I think a lot of it is people that are just committed to making the work, which is kind of unfortunate because it is largely like, you know, people who are on the fringes of society. But for you, Melissa, like what kind of stuff are you interested in like working on in terms of film? I don't want to be like, what did you like about this movie? Because it's my movie. But you know what I mean?
I will say like as a producer, what I'm looking for budget wise is I want you to get everything that you want. And it's cool, like going into it, knowing that you're like, you know, we had like this idea for a budget before and you're like, actually, I think we can do this for less. And that's kind of wild for a director to say. And so I thought that was interesting. What I liked about this was one, I just believe in you. And so that was something that was what drew me to it initially, because like I said, I read a very early version of the script. It changed a lot, like after I read that initial version and I liked it. And then when I read the new one, I was like, this is even better. And I was just like, I want to be a part of this in any way. And I think the first thing I said was, what do you need from me? Because I will help get this made. And then a little bit after that, I was like, I'd like to produce it if that's cool. What I liked about it is that at the end of the day, this is a love story. Like it's a love story and it's simple. And I think it's very clear what this is like on the page. And I like that. I love rom-coms or romantic stories. And I love dramas. I'm a soap opera fan, which surprises people when I initially tell them that. But I love watching soap operas. Soap operas, you can do anything with them, from having aliens and twins and people die and come back to life. And so I that's at the end of the day, like that's where I want to be in the world, is like working on soap operas. But the feature films that I've written have been like love stories and this, or even anti-love stories, but it's still like love is the center of what the story is.
It is like great that everyone involved in this is an underrepresented person in entertainment. And it is also this funny thing where like the people that have read it, that or the people that have wanted to work on it, that really believe in it, are, like I said, the people that are like, I believe in this because of some part of myself, versus what are some things that this money would go towards that you wouldn't think?
Crafty.
Yeah, you got to get everyone lunch.
Yeah, I mean, there's lunch and then there's crafty.
Catering and crafty, two separate things.
Yeah, locations,
parking,
location,
transpo, yes,
parking, permits, mm-hmm. insurance,
payroll.
Yeah. So I when I went to the Film Independent Forum, I met with payroll people. And I mean, there's so much, right? Like you're like opening a company. So let's start at the beginning. The big thing is when you start making a movie, I opened an LLC and a bank account and I got a credit card for You and Me Film. That's the LLC. Then from there, that's how you pay people so that you don't get hammered with taxes. And that's how you pay people so that everyone is paid through one entity. So again, like I'm a creative. I didn't go to school for business. I didn't go to school for math. So like, it's funny how much of this does have to do with business. So you have to have a payroll company that you're running things through. They take a percentage. You have to have permits to shoot places. You can't just run up and shoot, although sometimes people do. I've seen it. In order to, we've gone out and location scouted multiple studios. We need to make sure that the studio has room for the crew to hang out and set up, that it has parking, that it has the rooms that we need for the shots that we need. You know, there was one studio that was in our price range, but it didn't have glass between the recording area and the control room. And that would have been a problem for sound. Like all these little things that you're weighing, like how much money is it worth spending on this extra thing in order to make this thing easier? Versus how much, like, okay, we want a place with parking. This place will be more expensive, but does it make sense to do this place that doesn't have parking, but it'll make up for it in the cost of this not being as high? So it's like constant juggling of like math and budget in a way that, you know, they tell you go to screenwriting school, which I also didn't do. And then they don't say like, hey, what about business? Or how do you do math and stuff? So there's people that do that. That's like a line producer who is not joining us right now. But yeah, like it's all this stuff that you wouldn't normally think about. Even going through the budget that we had made, you know, it hadn't occurred to me money for someone to make a poster, money for, you know, social media assets, publicity, money to apply to film festivals. Even like, you know, what it costs to fill out grant forms or the time it takes to try to get grants.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.
What are some roles on a set that people wouldn't necessarily think of? Like people see credits and they're like, what's a gaffer?
DIT especially. Gaffer is the person in charge of lighting on set, and their counterpart is the key grip, who's in charge of shaping the light and safety. But I think a big one that indie films don't ever quantify or calculate is a digital imaging technician. That's the person in charge of loading and recording the media. A lot of times on indie films, they'll try to give that job to the second or first AC. The problem with that is that means that only one person is handling the entirety of the footage, which I have seen so many times. Normally there's three people watching the footage. There's the first AC, the script supervisor, and the digital imaging technician. And what happens on indie films sometimes is that they'll be like, well, we don't need a scripty because we don't have money. And then they'll be like, well, we don't need a DIT because we don't have money. And then they're like, well, we don't have a second AC because we don't have money. Or we'll just have the second AC or the first AC also copy footage, which means that there's only one person touching the footage all time instead of three people checking to make sure that you didn't drop a card. And like people are running so quickly, and that first AC or second AC is doing two or three people's jobs. So you are like lining yourself up to lose footage. Like you are set. And yeah, and it happens all the time, and people get really mad at first ACs, second ACs. On one feature I shot, Sarah, our line producer on this, was the one copying footage because we didn't have a DIT. And that is as the line producer. Well, she was just the producer. She was just the producer. It was so dangerous. And it was just like, when you're cutting, a lot of productions will attempt to step over a dollar to save pennies. And that's one of the things, is cutting ACs, cutting the DIT, because people are like, well, we don't really need that job. And it's just like, no, you do. Because it's also like, if a card is corrupt, we won't know. An AC wouldn't know. The operator wouldn't know. Nobody would know. The only person checking that footage is DIT.
Can you explain what an AC is?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So an AC is an assistant camera. So my department has three separate departments under it. We have lighting, we have shaping and supporting lighting and safety, and then we have camera. So in the camera department, the head of the camera department is somebody called a first assistant camera. They're in charge of hiring and they're in charge of equipment. They're making sure that the camera's ready, that the settings are ready, the camera is where it needs to go. We have all the equipment we need. They're working with like rental house companies to make sure that we haven't dropped anything that's going to be super necessary underneath them. And they're also pulling focus. Underneath the first assistant camera is the second assistant camera. So they're in charge of the camera log. So they record the height the angle, the lens, the filters, all that stuff to keep track in case we have to match the shot that we had somewhere in the scene, or if we have to come back for pickups, we know exactly how we shot it, where we shot it, what the angle was to match or replace. And they're also in charge of the slate. And that's just because they're helping information, which means they work with the script supervisor and sound to make sure all the data is working. They also time the shots unless the script supervisor is doing that. And then underneath them is the digital imaging technician who the first AC will give a card. Once we shoot in a card, the first AC will pull the card from the camera. They will hand that card to the second AC. Nobody ever has two cards in their hands at once if the system is working the way it's supposed to. That way you never slip cards because it's terrifying. And then the second AC will take the card to the digital imaging technician. That person will load the card, check the footage, make sure the card's not corrupt, copy it, put it to the side, back it up, and then return the card when it has been checked. They'll put it through a program called Choppa, which will tell them if the card is in any way corrupted that we can't see. And that's the camera department. And also in the camera department, sometimes you have a camera operator, unless the DP is doing that. The camera operator is the camera department princess. That's what they call them, because it is, some people think it's the head of the camera department, but it's not. It is the funnest job and has the least responsibility. Like, it's a very responsible job. You need to be really good at it to be a good camera operator. But like, the first AC is doing all the logistics. Camera operators don't do logistics unless you do TV, and then they are like doing a ton of stuff. But yeah, normally they're incredible. Like, you'll get a great operator, but like, all they do is like keep a Bluetooth in their ear and like don't have their walkie in and operate, and it looks beautiful. And then they show up at shooting call and they leave when the cameras are up, and they'll be like, peace. So like, it's a really great job, but it is not the head of the camera department. But yeah, that's the whole camera team.
So I think people don't realize too how long things take. Like, you know, you're looking at a scene and there's certain scenes where we've gone over shot listing and we've said, okay, this is going to take 2 days to do. So can you explain, either one of you, can you explain a little bit about like what people are not understanding about how long things take?
There's a lot of things that go into shooting, not like Gabriel just explained everything with camera. There's also like, for example, something that I feel like gets overlooked a lot are like the vanity departments with hair and makeup, because people are always rushing them and think that like that should only take like 5 minutes when it doesn't. It takes a lot more time, especially on this. We're going to have to do like tattoos, correct? And so that's going to take time. And then we've also like the scripty is going to have to like check and make sure that things are all matching and that it's correct and it lines up to what we were filming the day before. So the scripty is a person that is there making sure that, you know, if it depends, sometimes like directors are okay if things aren't, or writers, directors and writers are okay if things aren't exactly how they are on page, but making sure like words aren't dropped and that, or even like that plant is in the exact same place it was in the last scene. You know, that takes time. And even like if we've got a hold for sound or there's things coming through, and making sure that people aren't working longer than they should. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. And there's also a lot of where it seems like people are sitting around doing nothing, but there might be things that another department is doing during that time that we have to wait for.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, you said that it's funny to have a director want to cut the budget, but I do think that like realistically people don't understand how much goes into this kind of thing. And if everybody is doing their jobs, you don't notice, right? If a plant is turned incorrectly, you'll be like, ooh, a blooper, but like, or a goof, whatever. If everyone is firing on all cylinders, there wouldn't be anything for you to pick up on. So you might think, oh, filmmaking is easy. But it's because there are so many people that are working seamlessly to have everything work out the way that it needs to. And a lot of that stuff costs money. And so I think it's a matter of also making sure that these people are getting compensated fairly, because that's the way that these movies and TV shows that you love come together, is that, you know, the actors and the below the line crew are getting paid fairly. Because you saw a lot of this with the strike where they were like, well, why does this, you know, lighting tech need to be, you know, given enough days off or time or whatever, or benefits or anything? And it's like, because they're working. You don't think that they're doing anything, but that you don't think that they're doing anything because you're not noticing weird lighting because you're just sitting at home watching your Netflix show because they're doing a good job.
Right.
And I was going to say one of the most overlooked jobs that people think is so easy is production assistant, because that's like an entry level job. But I don't know about y'all, but I've been on sets where there's a production assistant or multiple that aren't good, and it's not a good time because production assistants are the first ones there, the first ones out. They kind of set the tone. Usually they're the person that's kind of like welcoming people on set, letting them know where they need to go, where they need to be working underneath the first AD. And it's just like, they're like, it is an entry level job, but you have to be like on it and in the places that you're supposed to be, on your walkie, constantly running around. Some, if you're like working on a set where there's a lot of shitty people, it's often a thankless job, but they are like the heart of the set.
Do you want to say what an AD is?
Assistant director, that is the person that is mostly like keeping timing on set, making sure that everything's being done in a timely manner, making sure that the department heads have what they need. They're kind of like, I would say like they're like the conductor of the crew.
Yeah, and they're in charge of safety.
That's why you need insurance.
Yes. They also direct the background actors too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they have like a million. I've been on sets with bad PAs and it's a nightmare. Like good PAs are like the heroes on set. And yeah, they get like, I was a PA for a while. I think everybody's been a PA for a minute. And it's just like, it's good because you'll like become a go-getter. Like it forces you to be always paying attention, always watching, always being on your game. But it is like every job you do after production assistant will be easier.
I was shooting a short for a while back and I asked my sister, who is a fantastic bar manager and not a fantastic PA. So I asked her to PA the shoot and she texted me at like 6 a.m. and was like, who do I give my coffee order to? And I was like, you bitch, everyone gives it to you. And she was like, oh, damn.
You're the one checking. PAs are the ones checking for who are you hungry? Letting people know if somebody's going to the bathroom and stuff. So,
but also a lot of on your feet, other important stuff that isn't just getting people coffee. But I know that's the stereotype, but yeah. So for this, where we've been at is we've secured most cast letters of intent. Can't really talk about that because of SAG, but I'm so excited about it. I'm like, I want to tell you so fucking badly. It's making me insane. And then Gabriel and I have gone through, we've gone through the script and shot listed and figured out, which means figuring out what each shot is going to be and what shots we need for each scene and how long it might take to do that. So we're doing that while we wait for SAG to get a fair deal. And then also location scouting. And then also like looking at what kind of favors, you know, asking friends of mine who are doctors if they know a doctor's office we can shoot in, or asking people if they know of grants or if they know of different places that might be willing to give money. Again, like I said, the first week push that we did with you guys where we were able to talk about the film and you guys were able to contribute, we were on a really big roll and you guys were 100% the heart of that. And then a very cool thing that hopefully we'll be able to announce by the time this comes out is that we got approved for the Film Independent fiscal sponsorship, which means now our film is up on the Film Independent site and anyone who donates to help us make the film, it's tax deductible. So you can make larger donations, can ask your rich parents to make larger donations, and they'll be tax deductible for you in a way that they weren't prior. So, and also a lot of crowdfunding sites, it's not tax deductible. So this one is. So that's a really big boon for us. And it was really cool to get accepted to that.
So that is an agreement that between an existing 501c3 nonprofit organization, which is what Film Independent is, and then an entity, which is what our LLC is, lacking the legal status needed to receive grants from foundations or individual donors or government agencies. So us doing that allows us, like being approved for that, allows us to open where we're getting donations and funding and grants from as well.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of interesting grants, like different cities have grants. There's different like tax things for different cities. There's LGBTQ grants. There's, you know, it's cobbling together a bunch of stuff because I don't have rich parents. It's been interesting talking to other filmmakers and, you know, talking to people about how scrappy they've been and the ways that they've been able to come up with money. And then I've really been I admire the people I've spoken to who I said, where did you get the money for your first film? And they've said, my parents. I actually admire that. I think that that's the sort of transparency that would go a long way in the film industry, and that I don't judge people who have had that experience because I'm like, good for you. Like, and don't pretend like that isn't the situation. So it's been interesting. And it's really actually helped me feel better about my imposter syndrome to have people who have made films that did really well tell me, oh, my parents gave me $100,000, which, wow, what is that like? But also that explains to me, okay, you're not better than me, or you're not a better filmmaker, or you don't have some special sauce that I don't have. I have, and I love, thank you for saying that you believe in me. I don't have that resource, but I have access to the knowledge and the very strong belief that the trans community wants to see trans stories that aren't about trauma, that wants to see trans stories that are love stories, that wants to see T for T couples represented, that wants to see trans people in romantic movies that don't have to do with being trans, that, you know, there's a world in which a set has mostly queer and marginalized people on it. Like, I gotta believe in that reality, which I think like the kids now call that DeLulu. I gotta believe in that reality. And I have had really amazing conversations with fans and people that are interested in contributing to the movie that also believe that way. And so if it has to be done independently, it has to be done independently, but I'm gonna do it. And the thing is that I could sit here and not do it and then be like, why doesn't this trans representation exist? Or I could just be like, well, we're going to move forward and we're going to do it. As people who have listened to this podcast know, I'm not in a great financial spot right now. I'm like personally not thriving, but I believe in this movie, and all the money that we've raised is in an account for the film that everyone has access to. It's to pay the people from the film. I've said many times, I do not have access to that privately. And so I believe in this movie, and I believe in like the indie filmmakers of yore that I've seen say the ways in which they believed in their movies and they got them done. I remember Jeremy Saulnier, who did Blue Ruin and Green Room, which are two great movies. They asked him how he did Green Room, and he said he took out a second mortgage on his house. And you think of that person as like an incredible filmmaker, and you're like, surely people are just throwing money at him. But it's like, no, he wants to do the things he believes in. And if you believe in that, and this is like, again, so cheesy, and I'm sorry if you came here and you were like, thought that I was some sort of practical person.
Whoever thought that?
I don't know. But it's like, I am very practical in terms of the way I wrote the movie and the way that I made sure that everything was doable and the way that I'm very open to things being less expensive and things changing in order to be less expensive and to make the most of our money. But I also am like, gosh darn it, like I could sit here and not make a movie, or I could sit here and make a movie. There's never going to be a good time. There's almost never a good time for indie filmmaking. But that's how I've seen so many amazing things get made. I've seen Mutt get made. I've seen, you know, Monica. I've seen like so many amazing things get made lately. And Kokomo City, just so many amazing things. You know, the difference is you just got to do it. And I think the running leap is that people understand film and they want to contribute, or people go, I just want to see trans people kiss on screen. And that's, you know, post strike, I've spoken to a lot of trans people about how I think that the mainstream studios are going to be a little bit more reticent about queer and trans stories because they want broad appeal. They want global stuff. They want things that will sell in China. If you all recall, there was one of the Star Wars movies was not able to be aired, or they cut a queer kiss from like the background. You know what I mean? Like we're not in a place where they're going to be putting this T for T love story in cinemas across, you know, the world. I don't know. Maybe everything will change by the time it comes out. I don't know. But I'm just saying that like that the these stories are going to have to come from the indie space now if we want to see them. And we're going to have to put our money where our mouth is because the studios aren't really going to. And that might actually be a, it might be a barrier. It also might be a catalyst for better art. And again, that's me stepping into my DeLulu
I don't
artist
think it's delusional.
Mind.
I don't think it's delusional. I tell my students a phrase when I was teaching. It's a phrase that I think I came up with, but I like it. You have to have the unquestionable faith of a successful person.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah. And it's just like you have to go in knowing that you will succeed, because even if this movie fails, you as a filmmaker will succeed. This movie won't fail. But like you have to go into every day and every project as with unquestionable faith in yourself and your success, because you will. You will succeed. Like you'll find people to succeed with and you will succeed.
And one thing I love about you, Gabriel, is that you're like, we were just like, let's pick a shooting schedule. And then it was like, we're going to do it. We're just going to do it. And like everything's going to, I mean, this is incredibly doable. It's happening. But it's just like, you know, everything is I just have to believe that like people will hear this and come through and be interested. And even if you're someone who's never been interested in filmmaking, a lot of people have had some, like, it's been very interesting. People who have money who are like, I've never thought about investing in a movie, or I've never thought about giving money to a movie, but now this is sort of an interesting thing for me. Like, I remember one person that gave us some money, I think mostly just is like, I want to have my name in the credits of something. And that's fun. That's fun. And like, I think that that's where like the average person, and I say average person to mean not studio execs or not, you know, like I think the average person has a stake and an interest in creating things that they want to see or things that they feel like it's important for them to be a part of. I want my name on this because I believe in this type of movie. And I think that's going to be really powerful coming forward, especially post-strike, where we could be very hopeless, but instead maybe we're going to be in a renaissance of really amazing queer indie film, which would be very cool.
I think that's the future, because it just, like, if you think about, like, Everything Everywhere All at Once was screened, I think, only in, like, a couple theaters over all of Europe, because they didn't believe that it, the studios didn't believe it would make its money back because it's Asian leads.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they only screened it in enough theaters in Europe to get it interested, like, get into, like, BAFTA and stuff, right? But they, like, really, they didn't screen it in Poland. They don't screen a lot of movies because the studios don't really have faith in people, but indie films do. Indie films, like, we exist entirely on the faith of, like, the general public. So it's just, like, we can make more creative, more expressive art because, like, we are the people. Like, it's a very, like, sort of anti-big government, not big government, I'm a socialist, anti, like, big studio kind of mentality of being, like, all the studios are, like, I don't have faith. Like, we have very few queer stuff happening. Like, they seem to be cutting more and more queer content. And it's just, like, the place where you can find that, like, is going to be the indie world. I feel like everybody's sort of moving in that direction because it's kind of general knowledge. Like Barbie is feminism alone, and I love it. I absolutely love it. But like the studios take the wrong message from success.
I had that conversation with somebody before too.
Yeah, and so like indie films, like A24 will take the right message from the success of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Like indie studios and indie filmmakers will take the right message from like indie film success. Being like, oh, we can go further.
Yeah. And I think that's what people want. And that's been really cool to see. And there's always been, I want to also say that trans filmmakers have always been here. Always. And they've existed through being trendy or not being trendy. And they've existed making things for $500, $50,000. Doing things on the weekend, finishing things as passion projects. There has been a beautiful history of that. One thing about never being rich, never having been rich, and never having rich parents and never having had money is that not having money feels very normal. Doing things on a small budget feels very normal. Doing things for less and making the most of it. I live there, baby.
Absolutely. We aren't limited by the necessity of having the best of everything.
No. Like how much, can you want to tell people how much cameras cost?
The Arri Alexa Mini, which is one of the most used cameras in film, indie film and union film alike, is $60,000 for the body.
That's what we're dealing with, folks.
Yeah. And like a lot, some people buy them. I don't buy cameras because I don't have money mostly, but also I don't want to limit myself to like one sensor forever. And you will never make your money back if you buy them. So set of lenses, you're looking at $40,000 if you're getting a set of lenses, everything. And that's the cameras. That's not the accessories. That's not a good tripod is $3,000. Yeah. So when we're renting, we're obviously renting for a lot less, but that's why people rent. They don't buy like, but it's like, it's still the rental prices are really high. And then you're dealing with like, you have to go with like what places have available, what deals they can make you. I've been really lucky to work with a lot of houses in LA, like Kessel and stuff, that cut incredible deals with a lot of young filmmakers, especially young female filmmakers, which is fantastic. But that's also based on what do they have available, because like Mulan is also renting there. So it's just like, if they want it and we want it, they get it, which is totally valid. We don't have the money. Or like Fun Ton cuts deals. Like there's tons of houses all across this country that will cut people deals because they want to make good indie films. They want to make good art. Like everybody wants to work on stuff like this. We get to, which is awesome. We just have to figure out how. But we can. That's doable. But yeah, realistically, like movies, when they say low budget, they mean $10 million or less. When we say low budget, we mean $300,000, $350,000. Like, we're in different spaces. The average cost of editing like an hour long or hour and a half long film, the cheapest editors are like $10,000, $9,000, like for a good editor. And like sound design, if sound design is bad, your movie dies. The only person that knows if sound is working is the sound person. So it's like you can't skimp on a good sound person. And like the greatest sound design in the world, you don't even hear.
The ambience of it's perfect, you're just in the film and you don't even notice it, but when it's bad you do
right notice. And it's like it's overwhelming. Like if you think about the movie Birdemic, one of the biggest failures of that movie and or successes, because the movie was so bad it was good, is the fact that you can hear when the camera's cutting. There's no continuous audio. They don't loop audio at all. Like we just, and there's also seconds between that the audio, because the audio was like, they didn't really master it in post. They didn't have a good sound designer. So it's just like, yeah, those people cost money. Their equipment costs money.
And I was going to say, like, on top of that too, like Gabe as a writer director and me as a producer, we're not budgeted for our work at this point.
I'm not taking any money.
And so like the only way that we'll like the film itself is like a reflection of the work that we put in. And it's something, you know, that will help us in the future for future things that we want to get made. But the only way that we'll make money is if we like sell this. So,
which is what can happen afterwards when it comes, we could do a whole nother episode about distribution, which would fill an entire episode after the film is finished with what happens next. But yeah, me and I, that's a good point, Melissa. Yeah. We are not taking like a salary from this. This is like a job, but it's also, it's just, I don't know. I believe in stuff, which again is so woo-woo. Has it served me in this industry? I don't know. Because I think I see a lot of people who are like, why would I do something I wasn't getting paid for? And I can't help it. I simply must create. It is a curse. I was talking to you guys right before this about a job that I had heard of that would have given me a much better life. And yet here I am suffering. But yeah, I think it'll be, honestly, I think it will be fun. My big thing is to believe in people helping, accept the help, which is hard for me, and to also in the moment be having fun and not be so, not make it a miserable experience. I think that it's a gift to be able to make stuff for people. So that's my present to you all. We'll probably do two more parts maybe, but is there any final thoughts on getting started on movies or what people don't know or something? Because for me, one of the biggest things was I said to my boyfriend, a low budget movie is usually like a low budget would be like $3 million. And he was like, for a movie? So I'm assuming our audience has that level of knowledge.
Yeah, go things that they always told us when you're writing like your first script, go deep, not wide. Limit your locations to 5 or less. Day exteriors are your cheapest scenes. Don't do night exteriors. Don't have animals. Don't have kids. Write your script with the, like, write what you know and write scripts with the means that you have. What do you have access? Don't write car scenes. Stop doing car scenes.
Even retrofitting. I talked to someone last night who was like stuck in her parents' like farmhouse thing during the pandemic and was like, let's make a movie with the four people we have and the farmhouse as a setting. And then they retrofitted a script for that. That's a great idea. Or, you know, there's a car that dies in the beginning of our script. And I was talking to a guy who's helping me slash the budget. And he was like, well, do you need to see the car or can we just see the fumes from the car and get the sound effect? If we do need to see the car, does it need to be on wheels? Because we could get a junker car and we could shoot it so you don't see that it doesn't have wheels. And I was like, this is the type of thinking I'm looking for.
Right, right. Yeah, if you could get it dropped out by AAA.
Exactly. A broken car, please. If you have a broken car in Los Angeles, let me know.
It's also like, oh crap, I had something and it's gone. Don't worry about it.
I was going to say a film is also like made or broken by the people that you surround yourself with. And so I made a rule years ago not to work with assholes anymore because it's just miserable. Even like if you're like in somewhere and like your location gets taken away at the last time, if you're working with people that understand what you're like, that this is, it could be like part of, this is part of the process of filmmaking, then they're not gonna be assholes about it. And you also like surround yourself with people that treat everyone with respect, not because of somebody's title. Like they just are just genuinely good people. So, and then also like, if you don't know something, ask somebody because the answer's out there. Don't pretend. This is not like a fake it till you make it type situation. Ask people. There are people out there that want to help you. So just ask people.
Especially if you're starting in G&E, because that's like a dangerous, people like think that, always ask. It's not, people want to teach you. People want to tell you. This is an industry where we love telling each other stuff. We're like, you don't know how to wrap this cable? Oh my God, let me show you. Like, we're thrilled to show you.
I will say the first like short film I was working on as a PA, they're like, wrap this cable. And I was like, I'm just like looping. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I was like following somebody and somebody's like, you don't know how to wrap the cable. And I thought I was about to get in trouble. And I was like, I mean, it's wrapping a cable. And they're like, no, this is how, and like, they just like sat with me and showed me how to properly
people
do
want
it.
This is like a teaching industry. We want to help people. Mm-hmm. We want to look out for people. Yeah. Like I learned that trick when I used to be in G&E because I came up through G&E. If I had a gaffer or key grip, especially because I think I'm a woman. So if I had a gaffer or key grip that was like an asshole, I know I just go to him and ask him a dumb question I know the answer to. And that they will talk to me for 30 minutes and then they will love me because I asked a question and they knew the answer and they were thrilled to teach me something. People want to teach people stuff. It's like what I was gonna say is there's no crash in Crash, the movie Crash, because of the budget. There is no physical crash in that movie. The climax, there's no crash. They couldn't afford it. They cut away. We cut around the physical crash.
Not the crash.
Crash with Sandra Bullock. Yeah,
Crash with Sandra Bullock.
Oh
got
man.
It. and you know what? The not being assholes and wanting to help and also coming up with stuff on the fly is why I believe in us.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
well, I hope that was interesting to people.
Things are gonna go wrong, but we'll be okay. Like, we have faith in success. So, like, our biggest investment is each other. So, yes, things are going to happen. Crazy stuff's going to happen. And we're just going to be like, okay, what do we do? Solve the problem.
Yeah. What's the next thing?
We'll fix it. Let's do it. How do we do it?
I hope that was interesting to people. If you have questions, we'll do, like, part 2 and 3 episodes if you want. But, yeah, if you have questions about movie making, let me know. You can email gabe@youandmefilm.com. You can also email the show at gabeisbadwithmoney@gmail.com. And follow the film on Instagram, you and me film, and DM me, ask anything. You can find ways to donate there. You can find, by now you'll hopefully have been able to find the Film Independent page, which we'll link. So literally, I just want to hear anything you guys have to say. People have written in and said, look, I don't have any money, but I'm a doctor. If you need any scenes in the film checked for accuracy, like whatever you can offer is really makes a big difference and it means a lot to me. So That's all. Bad with Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you, love you, bye!
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.